This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
Jet fuel.
One in four UK employees, for example, are planning on changing their jobs between early and mid-2022. So there's no sense of loyalty anymore, which is perfectly understandable.
Well, hello and welcome to the end of the year special present from the Fuel Podcast. And I'm your host, a smith called Keith. Now, a wise man once told me that the art of selling was to leave a client with a memorable piece of information that they'll always remember you for, and they file it under the useful category. And what you're about to hear is a mine of rich, deep, and exclusive research that you can use in your next business presentation, because the Fuel Podcast Express just made an unplanned stop, and in the spirit of content production, we just leaned into it. Now, I also produce another show for our sponsor, The Advertist, which are short 10-minute podlets called The New Business Briefing. For those shows, we employ the desk research skills of Victor Horton, who supplies pitch-winning intel to all the big agencies about emerging trends and consumer data. And you can listen to some of our previous shows on The Advertist YouTube channel. Just search for The Advertist and you'll find it. Anyway, me and Vic sat down for our usual 10-minute chat, and what he had to tell me was so stunning and so valuable that I wanted to share it in its entirety with you. We're going to cover the fascinating topic of working from home. Since the start of the pandemic in 2020, we have experienced a massive revolution in the way that we all go to work. There's been positives and there's been negatives. And I wanted to get Vic to share his insight in how this is manifesting around the world. So here's me and Vic talking about the whole working from home revolution. And hopefully it'll give you some great bits of information that you can give your clients and your prospects when you're talking to them. So sit back and enjoy me and Vic Horton in a special episode called Living in the Office, the Future of Working from Home. Hello again, Vic. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Hello, Keith. Nice to see you again.
And you, my friend, and you, our friend. So after the initial novelty of companies getting used to all their staff working from home, we saw a little bit of a pushback on that format, and some employers weren't exactly comfortable with it, and even some employees I've seen began to kind of crave office life. You'd think the ideal job would be to have all your home comforts close by, no commute and more sleep, but no, some people are just born to work in an office. So, but you and me, Vic, I've been working from home for quite a few years now. I mean, I've been doing it since 2007. And what, you're 6 years in now?
Yeah, that's right.
So what's your story? How did you get started in it?
Well, I asked my boss at Publicis if I could work from home 2 days a week. Because of family reasons, I just needed to spend a bit more time at home.
Right.
And the thing is that I was actually running my little department, Trends and Insights, but most of what I was doing could be done remotely. The only things that would have kept me coming into the office are meetings, most of which are completely irrelevant, and the need to use licensed terminals for running searches on tools like TGI and Touchpoints. But they would force me to be at Baker Street, which was fair enough. And also, you know, people like to see your face around as well. So, it was a good compromise after she said yes.
Fantastic.
You can have your time at home. It worked pretty well. Kind of feel a bit uneasy, though, at first, I recall, because a whole lifetime of office work kind of gives you a sense of presenteeism where you feel like you're either missing out on something important or people wonder where you were. and if you're working from home, you kind of imagine people saying, oh, he's just skiving off, isn't he? On those two work from home days, I quite irrationally missed the commute despite having more time to go to the gym or walk the dog, because it was just an ingrained part of the
just conditioned to it.
Yeah, of the whole lifestyle. Even mildly irritating routines you start to miss.
Yes, sure, sure. Well, let's just focus. You mentioned the word presenteeism a while ago, and it was defined originally, I think, when an employee doesn't actually sort of, they're not fully functioning in the workplace, but I mean, more recently, it's kind of been redefined as when employees feel guilty for not being part of the office, like you were saying, not being at meetings and things like that. And, you know, and people are kind of trying to justify their existence. I mean, but this must be quite common now. I mean, how many people are working from home?
Well, we get a rough idea from the ONS, who said that the proportion of people working from home more than doubled in 2020. Just looking at the stats, that's about a quarter of people having worked at home at some point in the week, compared with 12% of workers in 2019. So wow, a jump from 12% to 26% of working people. I mean, that's
more than doubled, yeah.
Jump, yeah. So what made people like us, who maybe felt like outliers back then, is now a work style that is pretty mainstream, or it certainly feels mainstream. But also, it doesn't mean that everybody's working that way. I mean, we're all in our little bubbles, I think. So that experience isn't distributed equally across the country. So nearly half of people working in London say they worked at home at some point last year. And high proportions of home workers come from London's more affluent suburbs as well.
Right. So basically what you're saying is, so people working in London have worked at home. I mean, yeah, most of them, or sort of half of them, have said that they have at least done some work at home, but they're mainly from the kind of richer, more suburban, more affluent kind of suburbs, right?
Yeah. There needs to be a bit more research in there, but there's definitely a
socioeconomic bias of some description, yeah.
Yeah, there is. And I mean, YouGov did look into this partly. They said that, I mean, this falls under the category of bleeding obvious, because there are some jobs where working from home is a lot simpler. So they are, and they list legal, real estate, accountancy, financial services, media, marketing, or IT industry. And you and I fall under one of those categories at least.
Yes.
And if you work in hospitality, transport, retail, health, manufacturing, education or construction, then you're very likely
you've
not
got
to
be
working from home ever.
No presenteeism there.
No, but it feels like almost like a common cultural experience, which happened overnight thanks to the first lockdown.
Right.
But it probably would have stayed a fringe option for a while without the pandemic. What was interesting is how it became accepted amongst quite a few employers, especially when compared with other pandemic accelerated work trends.
Wow. That's fantastic. So, I mean, you know, I mean, basically, we were heading in that direction anyway, but obviously it started to, and company sort of CEOs and stuff like that are kind of a lot more accepting of it. So, that's fantastic. We've had a couple of guests on the Fuel podcast recently. They were talking about how companies, because this references something you just mentioned, talking about how companies, especially in the kind of advertising and marketing sector, they haven't got enough kind of working class and minority representation in their workforce, and that a large reason for that was the lower cost of living, or was the cost of living, and specifically the cost of housing within a commutable distance of that workplace, like you were just saying about, you know, sort of, just sort of suburbs being able to cope with working from home. Now, I live in the USA, which is a hell of a commute to London, but one of those unintended consequences over here of the working from home revolution has been the amount of unfulfilled job vacancies, you know, the great resignation. I mean, how's that? What's that all about?
That's really quite something to see. I mean, it's not It's not really been replicated to any great extent in the UK, but we've seen a kind of rejection of some types of work. So employers are finding it difficult to fill certain vacancies. The legislators have been chipping away at some employer practices, such as the status of gig economy drivers. The cost of rentals are going to affect younger workers. We're not likely going to see these things manifested in such a way in the UK and Europe. So the Great Resignation, which is, I would see that as a symptom of the rather dystopian work culture that exists in the US. And
I don't know what you're talking about.
we didn't really get that here. I mean, there's been a call practically every year to boycott Black Friday. That's it. Yeah. I mean, it is advertised here, but I think we're so used to seeing people like Martin Lewis on the TV saying, just check the history of these discounts, because you'll find that there aren't discounts at all, and you kind of get the feeling that it's all a big con anyway. But I think that's the healthy British scepticism coming through.
So why else is the Great Resignation? I mean, why is that, do you think, more predominantly going to be in the US than in the UK?
Well, one of my little little things, if you like, is Reddit, and there's a fantastic new subreddit on there called Anti-Work. It acquired 1 million followers within the space of a couple of months, and you see there examples of workers who have made a decision to no longer accept the unacceptable, as it's been stated. So you see all these lovely little screen prints conversations that say fast food workers or retail workers have had from their bosses while they've been on leave, or they've been sick and their bosses say, come in or you'll be in big trouble. And the worker says, oh, well, that's it. You talk to me like that, I quit. And there's a lot of that going on.
Right.
So it's kind of a confluence, that this Great Resignation, if you like, of unique labour market conditions. So you've got record high.
So are you saying that British bosses are better?
Well, no, it's just that we've we don't have the same work dystopia that exists in the US. Let's put it that way. There's more protection here.
Right.
Unions still exist, even though they're not as powerful as they once were. Union busting is a big thing in the US, from what I read. There are so many more workers that aren't accepting low-wage jobs, because it's been said for a long time that for a lot of these low-wage workers, they're just one pay packet away from poverty.
Right.
And a lot of them have to depend on that job for health cover, which, of course, we take for granted in Europe.
Yeah.
And of course, you've got this phenomenon of women workers as well, who they've got to find childcare, and childcare is extremely expensive, and there's no way to square that circle. So why should they work to get paid the money that they're going to spend on childcare anyway? So they're resigning as well. This has been going on for over a year, mass quitting fueled by overwork and burnout as well. So over 100,000 US workers have authorised their unions to go on strike. So it's been happening from food industry to Hollywood to academia. If you want to see what's going on, just follow that subreddit.
That sounds like a place to hang out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in the UK, there is a feeling of, some of that is still going on. So 1 in 4 UK employees, for example, are planning on changing their jobs between early and mid 2022. So there's no sense of of loyalty anymore, which is perfectly understandable. People are ditching jobs altogether. Some are adopting new office spaces. Others want to continue to work remotely post-pandemic. So we're in a really interesting time when it comes to the sort of stresses that affect how people view life. I mean, in my my macro trends presentations, I almost inevitably start off with a description of the big stresses that shape the mindsets of the generations. So with the baby boomers, it was the Cold War that was worried about the bomb dropping. With Generation X, it was AIDS, which affected the way people that looked at sexuality. With millennials, they were very much affected by the financial crash,
right?
And still suffered from that. And Gen Z, from not only the pandemic, it's pretty much everything that everybody else has experienced on top of that, as well as the worry that they're going to live in a world that is rapidly declining because of climate change. And with all these kind of stresses sitting back, you can sit at the back of their minds. It's no surprise that priorities have shifted and work doesn't take on the same same flavour as it did for the older generation. Right. So that why be loyal to one employer? Why bust your gut to go into an office when I can do most of what I do at home?
Wow.
You know, assuming they work in one of those compatible sectors.
Sure. Wow, well, that's fantastic. Thank you, Vic. That's great insight. And it looks like we're all going to be, you know, the sort of working from home policy is probably going to be here to stay in one sort of shape or form. And, you know, I get to hear lots of things about, you know, companies that are doing a blended or a hybrid kind of working from home sort of setup with their employees and maybe in the office one day a week or something like that. But so, I mean, in all your research, I mean, what have you found out about what we've all got to look forward to, and how's this all going to pan out for us?
It's very hard to say long term, but because working from home is still a developing lifestyle. So despite the advantages, better work-life balance, less commuting, it's far from perfect. But
right.
You can look forward to things like, which are already happening now, so work emails received outside working hours. It's a big source of stress for workers because
right.
you want to switch off. You know, the pandemic-induced blurred line between home and work kind of forces us to think, well, we've got to cut off at some point. We can't we can't carry on thinking about work into the late hours of the evening.
Right.
And so if you look, for example, Portugal, there's a new law there which forbids bosses from contacting workers after hours.
Forbids them?
Yeah. So they can't. It's now illegal. So it's established to curb the burnout.
Right.
That work at home employees are experiencing during the pandemic. So, you know, that's pretty progressive policy from.
Isn't it? That really is.
Yeah. Think about how office social skills have suffered, especially if you're young.
Yes.
And you're trying to adapt to a new workplace, but you haven't been going in. Maybe it's your first job and you've been doing everything remotely, going to online meetings and so forth. It's not the same thing. So,
Exactly. I mean, you know, they've got to get asked, you know, where's the left-handed screwdriver and get me some skyhooks and stuff like that.
Yeah. And go get me some tartan paint. And LinkedIn did a study and he found that 57% of young people, that's between the ages of 18 and 34, said their ability to make small talk in the office had diminished because of the pandemic. So, I mean, that's an obvious, that has social skill implications there. So not being able to communicate face-to-face with your co-workers means that the opportunity to build strong relationships with colleagues is quite limited.
Yeah.
And earlier this year, Rishi Sunak warned about young people's careers. I mean, he said he doubted his banking career would have been successful if he had started in virtual meetings, and that being in the office helped build skills.
Right. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we take that with a pinch of salt, anything that comes out of the government. But, I mean, the UK is opening up. It has been for a few months, and
long may it continue, eh?
Yeah, well, yeah. Hopefully, the vaccines will stay on top of things, help us stay on top of things. Employers are trying to get workers back into the office, but it's causing some stress for people. A survey found that half of UK workers feel the pressure to put on a brave face when they return to office-based working.
Yes.
40% say they feel less resilient than before the pandemic. Only 16% feel their mental health is well supported at work, signalling a need for change. So, right. Yeah, you can just imagine all the lot of anxiety about going back into the office. So,
yeah,
and again, talking about women who work mostly from home, they risk seeing their careers stall now workers returning to the office in large numbers.
Right,
and that's according to a Bank of England economist, because office interaction is vital to advancing companies. Many women are still tied to home working, and it's a particular issue for mothers facing school disruptions and difficulty accessing childcare. But I mean, that these are all the short term things which we can see developing.
So those are the things we've got to address immediately, are those kind of issues.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what about the sort of longer term things? You know, what's going to happen in the next 2 to 3 years?
Well, let's look at the four-day working week. I'd say the speed with which working from home has normalised, has become normalised, it kind of bolsters the case for it. Governments and businesses in countries like Iceland, Japan, New Zealand and Spain have piloted it and have seen spikes in productivity, as well as improved mental health. I'd love to see them try that in the US.
they probably switch it to a 7-day working week.
Yeah. And workers might consider working from home worth a sacrifice. A third of UK workers would take a pay cut to work from home permanently.
Yeah.
There'll certainly be resistance to the old way of doing things. So, yes, there's reluctance to return to the office. In London, only 17% want to return to office life. 43% say only a pay rise would get them back. Again, talking about the younger people, the notion of traditional work is in question as they look at alternative paths, whether that's benevolent hacking skills to expose vulnerabilities in company systems.
The game team, poacher turned gamekeeper.
Because these are the generations that were brought up in in the digital world and learned how to code and know their way around an algorithm.
Yes. Yeah.
So you see, and also you see people sort of digitizing sort of like everyday skills. So you've got amateur chefs making six figures on TikTok. I mean, all these ideas, and also, you've got to consider that the value of money has changed. I mean, going back to when I was talking about the stresses that affect generations, I mean, with the financial crash, that was the beginning of a new way of looking at wealth, and experiences have become more important now anyway.
It reminds me of I had a podcast with a guy called Nick Vivian who runs a PR agency in the US, but he runs it from a motorhome, and because basically him and his partner they lived on the west coast of America and they couldn't afford to buy the property that they wanted to buy. They had a huge discount, a huge down payment set up and stuff, and so they just decided, let's just put that down payment on a motorhome, and they ended up buying a big motorhome. And so I think the idea that people can actually live outside of the sort of the normal realm of things, you can see that now, can't you? You can see it on things like YouTube and TikTok and stuff like that. But, you know, you get to see that people can live without a mortgage and without a big house and stuff like that.
I mean, that's a really interesting one because it's almost constantly in the press how difficult it is to own your own property. So why not just completely detach yourself from that that whole concept?
That's one of the things that we did for the business this year was actually to buy a motorhome, and we've converted it to an office and a podcast studio because, you know, that is, you know, I thought that was quite an innovative thing to do until you go on YouTube and TikTok and you see there's thousands, millions of other people are doing the same thing as well, becoming these kind of digital nomads and stuff. So, I mean, you know, how much of that lifestyle have you found out about?
Well, it's happening across Europe, certainly. So Croatia is opening a digital or series of digital nomad villages, apparently.
Wow.
They're offering premium mobile homes with either solo or co-living options, a community manager, exclusive events. And if you think about some of the other nations where there's you've had very severe population aging and populations moving away from rural areas. Look at Spain, which is incentivizing nomads to live in its ghost towns. As long as you've got the utilities set up and a means of transport, you can work remotely from there, or you can go on a little a sort of 21st century version of the Grand Tour that all the knobs and posh people used to do back in Victoria.
Back in the day, you just go and visit. Yes, the province.
Yeah, just have a little wander across Europe from country to country. Easier to do if you've got a European passport, of course, these days.
And of course, I mean, there are offices as well, aren't they? I mean, you know, there are office setups that you can access that you can just drop in on, like the corporate spaces that you can rent by the hour almost.
Oh, yeah. I mean, WeWork's a good example if they can stay in business. We know that certainly the phenomenon of satellite offices run by employers, which allow remote workers a place to meet without having to travel all the way, let's say, from Liverpool to London.
Right.
But those satellite offices will have the medium odd cons, and that would be attractive to employers who recruit team members working on the other side of country or the country or even abroad. So,
it's going to be quite exciting, isn't it?
It's globalization of working, if you like.
That's amazing. What an amazing kind of future we've got as well. That's something to look forward to. And, I mean, really superb information, Vic. Thank you so much for doing all that for us. And, I mean, basically, anyone, I mean, the point, the reason we do this is that if you're putting together a pitch for your agency, or if you're looking at, you know, new customers in various areas and stuff, that these are subjects in this reformatted version of the new business briefing. These are subjects that are going to be important across the board, across any sector, across any type of workforce. These are all the things. And Vic's the man to bring all this information to you. And if anyone is interested in finding out how that you can sort of help them with some other research, I mean, what's the best way to get hold of you, Vic?
By email, victor.horton@vhinsights.com. Horton is spelt the northern way, Houghton.
The proper way, yeah. Some might say that.
Well, I mean, I was born up north, but I've constantly been hassled over the pronunciation of
Well, good for you for keeping the U in there. That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Vic. Anyway, we'll see you next time. Have a great rest of the month. Have a nice rest, and I'll speak to you soon. All the best.
You too, Keith. Thanks. Thanks for your time.
So if that doesn't fill your boots research-wise, I don't know what will. Vic is the go-to guy for research, and I'm so glad he's on our team. Thanks, Vic. Very special stuff. Now you can all feel so much more in charge of the conversation when it comes to the subject of working from home. We're planning a bunch more of these types of shows, and Vic does a load of hard work to prepare for them, so don't let it go to waste. Have fun prospecting, and I hope this helps you swing a deal or two. If you enjoyed this show, please like, subscribe, and tell your friends and colleagues about us. Thank you for giving us all the support you do. We're looking forward to an even greater lineup of guests and topics next year, and that's all thanks to you and your support. Thanks also to co-producer Donna, to the band, the Prospectors, and finally to Matt Smith at Quijibo Design in downtown Indianapolis for all the IT support. Thanks for listening to this show. We hope you enjoyed it. For the very last show of the year, we have an unforgettable hootenanny of a chat with the legendary Helen Callcraft, who's all about new business and the art of account management and the amazing work she does for the causes that mean so much to her. I can't wait. Until next time, this is me, a Smith called Keith, signing off for the penultimate time this year on Fuel, the podcast for the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you?